It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
On the program today, why people do what they do. I mean, with jobs specifically, but also kind of big picture too. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Wednesday today, the very last day of June this time around. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Lots of news today, lots of news about which you will have heard lots elsewhere in the news fire hose. So we choose today to stay in our lane, keep our eye on the economic ball, and begin with this. News that is being widely reported that the White House is working on an executive order that would tighten oversight of industries that are dominated by just a couple really big companies. Everything is still in draft, of course, but the gist is that instead of relying on antitrust enforcement as it's traditionally known, federal agencies, these draft executive orders say, should promote competition in everything from agriculture to healthcare by using regulation. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino gets us going with that one.
The problems the executive order is aimed at solving arise when just two or three companies dominate a particular business. The government can use antitrust law in those situations.
But also, it's affected by decisions of every department in the government, whether it's the Department of Transportation or Health and Human Services or the Agriculture Department. All of them can make decisions that lead to more monopolies or fewer monopolies.
Jason Furman is an economist at Harvard who served as chair of the Council of Economic Advisors under President Obama. In 2016, just months before Donald Trump was elected president, Furman helped craft an executive order that leveraged the power of all those industry regulators.
We told every department to go out and find things in their areas that would increase competition.
The agencies proposed new rules. One would have let consumers access television without a cable box. Another required airlines to be more transparent about baggage fees. Yet another would have protected poultry farmers. But the Trump administration rolled back many of those rules. And now the Biden administration is looking at reopening the door to new rules in a whole bunch of industries.
We have problems in healthcare. We have problems in food and agriculture. We have problems in telecommunications.
Diana Moss is the president of the American Antitrust Institute. She says with Biden considering this order much earlier in his term, his administration stands a better chance of unraveling some of the consolidation that's happened in those industries. That is, if they can get new rules past the inevitable lawsuits that could be heard by President Trump's judicial appointees. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
Tomorrow, the most powerful job on the planet loses a little piece of that power. The job, of course, is President of the United States. And what is being lost is something called trade promotion authority, the ability presidents have had on and off through the years, depending on how Congress is feeling, to negotiate a trade deal and send it to Congress without running the risk of Congress trying to rewrite it. Marketplace's Sabri Benishour is on the trade desk today.
Picture it, 1828. John Quincy Adams is president, and Congress passes something called the Tariff of Abominations.
Well, it wasn't formally named that, but that's the moniker it was given after it was passed.
Doug Irwin is professor of economics at Dartmouth. Congress was fighting over whether tariffs should be high or low.
The opponents of the high tariffs kept adding to the tariffs in the hopes that it would become so bad that other members of Congress would vote it down. But instead, other members said, hey, this is actually pretty good. So that's why they called it an abomination afterwards.
It is an example of how Congress can mess up trade policy. In 1974, as trade deals became more complex, Congress agreed to temporarily give the president authority to negotiate with other countries over trade. Mary Lovely is with the Peterson Institute.
Basically means that once an agreement is reached by the president, Congress needs to vote it up or down.
Take It or Leave It. Antonio Ortiz Mena is with the Albright Group. He helped negotiate the original NAFTA on the Mexican side. Without trade promotion authority, he says,
you would never end up concluding the negotiations. You would be negotiating with the executive branch, and then you would be negotiating with dozens of House members and senators.
Too many cooks in the kitchen. President Biden is letting that power lapse now, mostly because, well, the trade deal kitchen is closed. He wants to focus on enforcement of existing trade deals before going through the ordeal of creating new ones. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, as the first half of 2021 goes in the record books, more record highs, lots of green. What? Me worry? We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Tomorrow is going to be a big day in healthcare, specifically for the millions of people who lost the health insurance they had through their jobs when they lost those jobs because of the pandemic. Under the most recent virus relief package, just about everybody who got unemployment benefits this year will be eligible, starting tomorrow, for free health insurance under the Affordable Care Act for the rest of the year. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer has that story.
If you received at least a week of unemployment benefits this year and sign up for Obamacare, regardless of your income,
you could actually get an insurance plan for free.
Vivian Ho is a health economist at Rice University. She says someone receiving unemployment who's just enrolling in Obamacare would save more than $7,000 in premiums. They'd still be on the hook for copays of around $5 and a low deductible.
I do think it'll help some people who are just really in a desperate situation right now, that if you've lost your job in the middle of this pandemic and you have no income and you're trying to deal with housing and put food on the table.
The Congressional Budget Office estimates that more than 1 million people will take the government up on its offer of free insurance. Karen Politz is a senior fellow at the Kaiser Family Foundation.
I think the goal was absolutely to make coverage as available and affordable as possible.
And even though the free coverage only lasts through this year, there's a good chance the newly insured will stay on Obamacare because of other temporary subsidies that last through 2022. Catherine Baker is a health economist at the University of Chicago.
Once people get enrolled in a policy, they do tend to stick with it, partly because they get access to doctors who then have a relationship with them.
And that will inch the Biden administration closer to its goal of health care coverage for all. I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Look, sometimes you miss us. We get it. Can't always be sitting around the radio or the streaming service or what have you. If that happens, podcast us, would you? Given the way the music streaming economy works, specifically the relatively paltry remuneration that musicians get from the various streamers, those artists got to take to the road to really make money. Live concerts for fans, right? The pandemic, of course, blew a hole in that business model, but some bands did scratch and scrape their way through and are now back out on the road again, one of them being the Western swing slash country band Asleep at the Wheel. They're based down in Austin, Texas. They've been around for about 50 years. And Marketplace's Andy Euler caught up with them the other day to hear how they got through the pandemic and what their business prospects might be looking like now.
On a recent Tuesday night at the Saxon Pub, a small honky-tonk in South Austin, Ray Benson steps up to the mic.
Yeah, it's so good to be back here at the Saxon Pub.
The 6'7", 70-year-old Benson is up on stage wearing the get-up he's been rocking for the better part of five decades, the frontman of Asleep at the Wheel. Tonight, it's a black pearl snap shirt, a white cowboy hat, and dark leather boots. He starts them out with the favorites.
I saw miles and miles of Texas.
In the last year, the wheel, as the band's known, did not rack up a lot of miles in Texas or anywhere else. It was only able to play a few shows here and there to small audiences because music venues were shuttered. And the timing for this slowdown was especially bad. Benson had hired a film crew to document the Wheel's 50th year as a band.
I had people coming from Australia, from Rome, Italy, from all over the world to come down to Austin for a big concert and a record and a film. But, you know, all of a sudden, March the 7th, the whole thing went away.
That's when Benson was himself diagnosed with COVID. He was one of the first cases on record in the Austin area. Now, he had a mild case, but he still couldn't do his job because the band just didn't have anywhere to play.
We lost 75% of our income. You know, we lost over $1 million of income in 2020.
And a band like Asleep at the Wheel is a small business. And you know what a small business does when it loses a ton of revenue? It cuts expenses.
We were pinching pennies. First things we had to do was, A, turn off all of the accounts that relate to touring, i.e. the bus, the stupid things like the satellite TV on the bus, you know, costs $200 a month.
Benson also suspended insurance on the tour vans because they didn't have anywhere to go. They didn't need liability insurance for gigs because they weren't playing them anymore. Something else the band did as a small business, it applied for federal pandemic relief through the Paycheck Protection Program.
We have payroll. Like any small business, you know, we just applied and got it, and it saved our company.
That PPP money allowed him to pay his three salaried workers for a few months and support band members who earn their money on the road.
Well, it's all your fault. If I'm not sleeping, I live on dreams instead of eating.
Katie Shore's been singing with Asleep at the Wheel for 8 years, but when the pandemic hit, her husband lost his job as an engineer and her limited gigs just weren't enough to cover the bills. So she got a job waiting tables.
I mean, there were times we were looking at each other just going, what happened? You know, I'm literally waiting tables.
Her new gig was a little restaurant outside of Austin called Hilltop Cafe. It happens to be owned by a former member of Asleep at the Wheel, Johnny Nicholas.
And for me, you know, I kind of found a little bit of a hack. If Johnny was playing, you know, on a night that I was working and I went and sat in and played a few tunes with him, I would always make better tips. So we'd kind of have a hustle, but sometimes it was just so busy I couldn't do that.
Now, she's no longer waiting tables because Texas has been open for live music for a few months, which means the Wheel's basically back out on the road, touring behind an EP the band cut during the pandemic called Better Times.
Live life like we used to, for those days we pine, but we'll be together in better times.
We'll be together in better times is all about this pandemic and what we've experienced.
Neighbors and friends.
Benson says the band experienced something just a few weeks ago in Northwest Texas that got him smiling again.
We played a dance in Amarillo. It was unbelievable. It was 1,000 people. And it was so nice to see, you know, 500 people out there kicking it up.
And with 40% of the Texas population now fully vaccinated, Benson says he expects even more people to be kicking it up at the Wheel's next shows. In Austin, I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Coming up.
There was not going to be enough money.
Never is, especially in a pandemic. But first, sure, why not? Let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial is up 210 points today, 0.6%, 34,502. The NASDAQ down 24 points, about 0.1%, 14,503. The S&P 500 lifted 5 points, about 0.1%, 42.97. That's record high for the S&P, by the way. Pending home sales jumped 8% in May from the previous month. That figure reflects signed contracts on existing homes. But that was in May. Now mortgage demand is falling, down nearly 7% this week. That's according to the Mortgage Bankers Association. Maybe, I don't know, because of those high home prices? Anyway, the mortgage firm Rocket slumped 4.2% today. Home search company Zillow off 1.6%. As some of us are starting to think about where we might want to grab a quick meal to bring back to, you know, the office, news that the cafe chain Au Bon Pain has been sold. It was bought by a franchisee of Yum Brands. Yum, of course, does Pizza Hut, some other stuff too. They chowed down 0.4% today. Bond prices went up. The yield on the 10-year T-note thus went down 1.46%. You are listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. This week is awash with jobs news. We got private payrolls this morning from the processing firm ADP. Weekly first-time claims for unemployment benefits come out tomorrow. And then on Friday, it's the biggie, the June jobs report. And so we are going to talk jobs here for a little while, but not people losing them so much or even people getting them, but people leaving them because of this pandemic and what that decision has meant for them.
My name is Shauna Cruz. I'm a former indoor cycling studio owner in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I'm currently a newly graduated medical esthetician and lash artist in Mesa, Arizona.
My name is Juanita Gable. I live in Cincinnati, Ohio. I am formerly a personal trainer and ballroom dance instructor turned student in the hopes of pursuing a different career as an occupational therapist.
My name is Alan Buxbaum. I come from Hillsdale, New Jersey, and I currently live in Baltimore. I am an orchestra conductor, and I have also taken up medical coding in order to financially sustain myself.
So we did a little roundtable, and I started when we talked the other day, the four of us, with Alan Buxbaum and why he decided to do what he did.
Orchestra conducting is a huge passion and absolutely love it, and I cannot imagine my life without it. But I also was facing the harsh reality that financially it would take me some time if I didn't want to take chances, especially paying back student loans and whatnot.
And what made medical coding attractive to you?
The fact, number one, it's you're able to do it remotely, which is huge because in order to get gigs like in various cities around the country, around the world, it just makes it way easier to have a remote job. And I was able to finish the course in a good 7 months or so. And I found a job about a month after that.
Shauna, you had a business, right? You had a thing going before the pandemic. And then obviously the pandemic took that out from under you.
My business is actually still going.
Okay.
They're doing great. We just knew when the pandemic started that it was going to put it down to the point that there were two couples owning it. There was not going to be enough money coming out of this for two families.
And you went from owning a cycling studio to doing aesthetics and skincare. What drove that?
Well, you would think going from heavy breathing to being in someone's face for a pandemic would be a bad idea. But I had banked on the fact that if I started school, it's a 6-month program in November, that by June we would be okay. And that was a lot of hopes and crossed fingers that have come to fruition by the grace of the above. I'm very lucky, I will say that. But the medical esthetician was a passion of something I loved. And that I didn't think was going away. There isn't Peloton for skincare yet, thank God. And I was really, it was something that I loved still. I couldn't go from something I love so passionately to something else.
Juanita Gable, you were a ballroom dance instructor and a personal trainer, both of which seem not to be pandemic friendly. How did, or maybe the decision was forced on you that it was time for a change?
Yes, it was not voluntary. Yeah. And as I was telling everybody else, I feel like after the Great Recession, I suffer from PFSD, post-financial stress disorder, where I had a period of unemployment and I just do not ever want to feel that vulnerable ever again. So I immediately enrolled in school thinking I might do nursing and decided to move towards occupational therapy. So yes, the initial terror is gone. You know, and I think at this point I've come to realize that adaptability, I'm grateful, is one of my strengths. So I'm going to feel this out and see how things go. And I'm looking at job opportunities because this is definitely a different job market than it was back in the Great Recession. And I'm hoping that I can take advantage of it and, you know, be better off for it.
Change is hard, right? And so even if it's forced on you or if you're doing it yourself, it's hard. And I guess my question is about the fear of the unknown. Did you have any of that?
We weren't only making that job change. We were moving into a home in a city we'd been to once a decade ago. We bought that home online. We did the move during the pandemic. We had no idea from state to state what the requirements were as we even drove. We were just taking it day by day. I treat my previous life to the pandemic as a previous life, exactly that. Like I just had to close it off, and it was a different person, a different place. And it's painful sometimes. And I'm sure these other, Alan and Juanita can understand as well that these were things we loved. These were lives we loved.
For sure.
So.
Alan, the thing Shauna said about the previous life being a previous life, I thought I heard you sort of verbally nod there.
Yeah, it's interesting because at least in my situation, I'm not leaving conducting. I'm still applying. I'm still doing so on things. But I definitely view my life as having to deal, finding ways to process the fear and to not let it take control. But, you know, as they say, follow the fear. And in this case, I think it's been going really well.
You know, it's funny. And Juanita, I'm going to start with you. You all three sound to some degree empowered by the decisions that have either been forced on you or that you made. Do I have that right?
In my case, I definitely feel empowered. I like that term. You know, I immediately went to school. I did not have a great school experience the first time around. I wasn't really ready for college the first time. And I aced all of my classes. So whatever weakness I felt I had in potentially applying to grad school is no longer there. And I realized that I do have the discipline and the, you know, intellectual capacity to learn complex things, things I thought I wouldn't be able to conquer, and woohoo, I'm there.
Yeah, yeah, good for you. Shauna, you leaned all the way into this one, all the way. Clearly you took this and it made you stronger.
Oh, it was, I mean, going to school with three small children at 42, you know, anatomy and chemistry, and it's like, I don't think my brain can do this, and it did. And I just think that construct of what we thought life was, this is what we have to do. Just like Alan, this is it. These are your choices. Was just ripped out from underneath us. Like, no, it's not. Matter of fact, everything can change. Everything did change. And so if everything in our society can change overnight, I can too.
Yeah, you go, Shauna.
Yeah. Alan, and last round of questions, and then I'll let you guys get back to those new jobs you have. In a year, Alan, what are you doing?
In a year, I hope to have a fully remote job that has enough income, you know, doesn't have to be crazy, but enough income to be comfortable at least, getting my loans and so on, to have things, whether the conducting career is, you know, spinning ahead like crazy or not, at least to have things rolling more than they are right now again, since things kind of came to a standstill, if you will, with everything. And you know, I hope there's other things that I can't even think of right now.
Yeah. Juanita, a year from now, what are you doing? Where are you?
Well, so I'm kind of in this in-between stage. The program that I had hoped to go into, occupational therapy assistant, because it's undergraduate, I can't get any financial aid at all. And so I'm very hesitant to go into any kind of debt. And I'm looking at other employment opportunities. I've gone through a few interviews with some positive results. And so I actually think I may be returning to work, thankfully, with the benefits and the normal schedule that I did not have before. Yeah. And for that, I am very grateful.
Shauna, last word to you. In a year, where are you? What are you doing?
I just want to be happy, I think. I just want to be financially stable and happy. And I think that's how this has changed me. Whatever gets me there, great. If it's a full clientele of skincare clients and lashing clients, then that's it. But I think I'm really open to what the future and the next year holds.
Well, thanks to all three of you for your time and good luck. Good luck. You know what? We'll call you in a year and we'll do this all over again.
Awesome.
How about that?
That's
yeah.
Sounds great.
That'd be great.
There we go. All right.
Awesome.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Kai.
I appreciate it. Take care. If you, by the way, have changed careers during the pandemic or maybe picked up an additional skill or went back to school, let us know, would you? We want to tell that story. Marketplace.org is where you do that. This final note on the way out today, which it seems to me you kind of got to put into the work in the refs bucket. Amazon filed a 25-page petition with the Federal Trade Commission today, arguing that newly installed FTC chair Lina Khan ought to recuse herself from any antitrust conversations involving Amazon. Khan has made no secret over the years at Yale Law School, a prior stint as an FTC staffer, and most recently teaching antitrust law at Columbia, of her worries about big tech. Amazon claims in the petition that Khan's record, were she to take part in Amazonian decisions, would violate federal ethics rules and the company's due process rights. The FTC had no comment on the petition. I, however, am going to take the under on a recusal. All right, we got to go. And we're gonna, but here is your moment of economic context. Comes to us courtesy of the Wall Street Journal today, which picked up on a report from the National Taxpayer Advocate, about whom, by the way, Nancy Marshall Genzer has done some stories. Anyway, if you are still waiting for your refund, here's why. The report says the IRS ended the 2021 tax filing season, which, remember, was delayed by the various tax provisions of all those relief bills. The IRS ended with 35.3 million unprocessed returns. Maybe yours is in that pile somewhere. I don't know. Our media production team includes Brian Allison, Drew Jostad, Jeff Peters, Jay Siebold, Leanna Squillace, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Dorado, and Becca Weinman. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.